Blog Talk Radio.
You were the first in this family to get into college.
I'm so proud of you.
I can't go, can I? I just can't afford to send you.
You didn't mean to let you down.
I understand. Maybe next year. Maybe. Hard-working students deserve a chance. Please, support the United Negro College Fund. A mind is a terrible thing to waste.
to breathe with me.
This is a product of WBNN. This is Breaking the Silence, and I'm your host, Mo Garman, on air now from Lagos, Nigeria. Dial in at 516-453-9133 and press 1 to join the conversation. Brought to you by Ngozi Time Multimedia. Tonight, we have an interview with Dr. Abigail Lev. Our topic is how untreated trauma impacts relationships. Before we begin, I want to say thanks to everyone for supporting my show, and I want to thank WBNN family for all the support I received from you. It really means a lot to me, and a special shout out to Brother O for giving me this opportunity to share my point of view. Tonight, we will begin with a quote from Dr. Wayne Dyer. He says, "Remind yourself that you cannot fail at being yourself." Now I'd like to introduce my guest today. Again, her name is Dr. Abigail Lev. She is a psychotherapist, author, mediator, and executive coach located in San Francisco, California. Dr. Lev is the director of the Bay Area Cognitive Behavioral Therapy Center, which is a center that specializes in cognitive behavioral therapy to help individuals and couples break their unhelpful patterns, develop healthier habits, and improve the all areas of life. She has co-authored 3 books on using cognitive behavioral therapy to strengthen relationships, and has presented her research at numerous conferences. Dr. Lev is also the founder of CBT Online, which is an online platform that connects people with online therapists who specialize in behavioral therapy and offer cognitive behavioral therapy resources such as webinars, e-courses, videos, worksheets, mindfulness audio, and much more. Dr. Lev utilizes evidence-based practice to help people who are struggling with a variety of issues live happier, more fulfilling lives. Hello, Dr. Lev. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here, Mo. I'm happy to be on the show.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. I'm glad we finally got to connect.
Yes.
Okay. I'd like to begin with a basic question about trauma. Can you tell us what trauma is and how does unhealed trauma impact our relationships?
Sure, yeah. Trauma is a response to an incident that causes us threat, either physiological threat, like physical threat, emotional threat, or psychological threat. And when we have a traumatic incident, we have a trauma response where we feel we have an emotional, psychological response to the traumatic event. Now, there's different kinds of traumas, so they impact relationship differently. So for example, if you have an acute trauma, which means you just have one traumatic incident, that may not impact your relationship as much as a chronic trauma or complex PTSD. So if I am held up at gunpoint, that trauma may impact me, but not so much interpersonally. My relationships will be impacted more by chronic trauma, right? Trauma that is repeated, or complex PTSD, which is a more interpersonal trauma that is repeated with closer people in our lives. And that impacts, you know, our core beliefs and the way we think about others and relationships and the way we are able to trust.
Okay, so basically it does boil down to trust, especially it sounds like with the chronic trauma, it seems like it becomes a trust issue. You can't trust your surroundings, is that what you're saying?
Right, we can't trust others. We also have difficulty trusting ourselves. We have difficulty trusting mm-hmm. ourselves to be able to distinguish when somebody is a trustworthy person or not.
Okay. That makes sense. That's because of the traumatic incident that you were describing.
Right. It's like if we grow up with parents that are not trustworthy and we don't have a model for what a trustworthy, honest person looks like, we have difficulty knowing when people are safe and when they're not.
Right. We don't have the tools, as they put it.
Right. Right. It's like if we never see what a healthy person looks like, we don't trust ourselves to be able to identify them.
Right. Right. Next question. What is codependency and how do we overcome codependency and insecurity in a relationship?
Yeah, well, codependency in a relationship is a little bit different than being insecure in a relationship. Insecurity could look differently, right? But codependency is like a core belief. So we have a core belief that other people's needs are more important than our own, and we have this belief that we are responsible for others. There's a sense of guilt and over-responsibility, or that we are the cause of other people's feelings, thoughts, and actions. So we're likely to blame ourselves for other people's actions or take responsibility for other people's actions, right? Or kind of enable other people's destructive behaviors. And we're not able mm-hmm. to set good boundaries and limits in relationships because we lose ourselves. If we're codependent, we kind of put other people's needs and feelings above our own. We get enmeshed. And so when we have these kind of core beliefs, when it brings up automatic thoughts, feelings, sensations, so we feel guilty, right? We feel a sense of over-responsibility. We have certain automatic thoughts like we should – you know, let the person keep living with us even though they're drinking and being abusive, or we have certain thoughts like they're going to change if I'm just act better, if I'm more available, right? And so healing codependency is a long process. Codependency is not a diagnosis, right? It's not like a mental diagnosis. It's more of a belief system. And yeah. if we want to heal codependency, we have to really, A, make friends with these thoughts and feelings. We have to be willing to make friends with guilt and notice what guilt feels like in our bodies and be able to start distinguishing what we're needing in relationships and what our boundaries are, what our lines are, when our needs are not being met and how to assert ourselves. So people who have issues with codependency, it really helps to learn communication skills, right? Assertiveness training. And knowing how do we recognize when we have certain needs, how do we make requests in relationships to get these needs met? How do we recognize when we're relating with someone who's a willing participant, someone who's willing to meet our needs, and someone who's impacted by our feelings, right, and our internal experiences?
Wow, that was a great answer. I know for me, as a person, I've spoken to this on my show before. I was in an abusive relationship in the past, and I had difficulty with boundaries. I realized
right.
I was very codependent, and I had a hard time laying those boundaries out. I used to think that everything was my fault.
Right.
And just like you said, I thought he would change, and then he threw it on me. Everything in the relationship was my fault.
Right. Right. And so when you're seeing yourself as the cause, right, of other people's thoughts, feelings, and behaviors, it's a double-edged sword because it brings up a lot of pain, right, because you feel mm-hmm. at fault and you feel guilty and you feel bad. But the dilemma is that it also gives you a sense of control, right? It's out of your control when your partner is being abusive, but if you could tell yourself, well, if I just become better, if I'm more this or if I'm less that, then things will be better. It gives you this false sense of control. So it's hard to let go of core beliefs because they also make the world feel more predictable and safe. It makes us feel like, okay, I could have it under control.
Right, right. It's a false sense of security.
Right.
Yeah.
Even if it's painful, it brings up a lot of pain feeling at fault for awful things. but it's still sometimes easier, right, to feel like you could be the one that changes.
Yes, it seemed very normal to me at the time. It wasn't until I got into therapy that I realized what I was doing, and that's why I wanted to bring this topic out, because it's such an important topic with people that have gone through abuse.
No. I was going to say that what you're making such an important point here, right, is that people who are going through trauma or have been in abusive relationships, they don't know that they've been going through trauma, right? They don't know that they're in an abusive relationship, right? So part of the trauma and the healing is to actually recognize that that's not okay and that's not healthy, and recognizing what healthy relationships look like.
Right. My mom used to say I was a bum magnet.
right.
If there was a bum within a 30-mile radius, I was attracted to him. You know, it was kind of crazy there for a while. But I spent 8 years by myself just trying to get myself together.
Right.
And just trying to work on my boundaries and make things more healthy. So I encourage people to take that time for themselves.
Right.
I'm not saying it would take them 8 years. That's how long it took me, but I am saying take some time and do the work. It's worth it to get into a healthy relationship.
Right. And when we are codependent, we're magnets to people who are on the opposite spectrum, right? So if we're self-sacrificing, mm-hmm. we tend to then kind of attract people who are on the opposite, who are entitled, right?
Right. Definitely. Definitely entitled.
Yeah. Right.
Okay. My next question is, what is mindfulness and how can we use it to help us take effective actions in our relationships?
Mindfulness is like, it's a skill that we learn and we practice and we cultivate. So I think about mindfulness as kind of like exercises for our brain, the way that we would go to the gym and exercise our muscles. So mindfulness is a muscle, and when we're practicing it, it hurts. It doesn't always feel comfortable. So some people think mindfulness will make us feel calm and relaxed, but that's not necessarily true. Mindfulness is a practice of coming back to the present moment over and over again so that we are staying present in the present moment contact with all of our internal experiences, with our thoughts, our feelings, our sensations. And we're staying with them in a non-judgmental, kind, gentle, and loving way. And part of staying in the present moment with all of these experiences in such a way where we're allowing them to be as they are and letting them unfold is not to just feel differently, but it's so that our thoughts and our feelings have less control over our behaviors. So, for example, if we're codependent, then certain thoughts and feelings will pull us to do certain behaviors, right? Let's imagine mm-hmm. that somebody asks me, can I borrow your car? And I feel guilty and I feel like I'm being selfish if I don't let them borrow my car. And so in order to get rid of feeling guilty and selfish, I just go, here, yes, you could borrow my car. But then later I feel, right, like angry and I betrayed myself and I'm upset with myself because I did something I don't want to do. So mindfulness...
Right.
Your mindfulness helps us build a relationship with guilt and certain thoughts so that when we're more willing to have these experiences have less control over our behaviors. We have more freedom to choose our actions in moments of trigger. So if I'm willing to have guilt, if I'm willing to stay mindful with it and present, notice where it is in my body, what color is it, what shape is it, what urges do I get with guilt? I notice the thoughts that come up with guilt. I'm selfish. This person is going to suffer. I have to take care of them. But the more mindful I am, the less pulled I am by the stories and the feelings, and then I have this moment of freedom to choose what I want to be about. Maybe I'll say, let me think about it, instead of just saying yes. But without being willing to have all of our internal experiences, the less mindful we are, the more automatic our behaviors are. We just do old behaviors that we've learned, right, with these thoughts, feelings, and sensations.
Wow. So a lot of this is learned behaviors that we've done over time through repetition of going through whatever trauma we went through.
That's exactly it. We have developed these very automatic learned behaviors, our conditioning, right? And
right.
then if we're able to practice mindfulness, then we could break that conditioning behaviorally. We could start doing new behaviors because we can't actually change our beliefs. We can't just go, I want a different belief. We have to do new behaviors, right, with healthier people,
right.
and then our beliefs change. And then we feel
okay.
better.
Okay. All right. That makes sense. Next, we're going to have a track by the Internet Hall of Fame Radio. Listen to me. I can't even talk. A track next by Internet Radio Hall of Fame broadcasting legend Brother O.
Let me tell you why I love him. 'Cause he is the truth. And he is so real. And I love the way that he makes me feel. And if I am a reflection of him, then I must be fly. Because his light shines so bright, I would lie. I remember the very first day that I saw him. I found myself immediately intrigued by him. It's almost like I knew this man from another life. Like back then, maybe I was his husband, maybe he was my wife. And here the things I don't like about him are fine with me. 'Cause it's not hard for me to understand him, 'cause he's so much like me. And it's truly my pleasure to share his company. And I know that it's God's gift to breathe the air he breathes. Oh, it's the truth that he is so real. And I love the way that he makes me feel. And if I am a reflection of him, then I must be fly. Because his light is not so bright, I would lie.
Product of WBNN. This is Breaking the Silence, and I'm your host, Mo Garman. On air now from Lagos, Nigeria. Dial in at 516-453-9133 and press 1 to join the conversation. Brought to you by Ngozi Time Multimedia. Tonight we have an interview with Dr. Abigail Lev, and our topic is how untreated trauma impacts our relationships. And Dr. Lev is giving us a lot of feedback. She's really impressive here.
Thank you.
I have more questions for you.
Sure.
The next question I have is, how do we recognize the signs and defend ourselves from toxic people and relationships?
Yeah. I find that the term toxic people is a little bit too broad. My preference is to say, is this person a willing participant or are they not a willing participant? A willing participant is someone who's impacted by our feelings and our needs and who's capable of empathy, right? They're able to empathize with our experience. So we have to be able to distinguish between what we need and what we want. Like if I need affection, I may want a kiss or I may want a hug or I may want somebody to hold my hand, but I have to be very flexible with what I want and rigid with my need. So I don't let go of my need for affection, but I'm very flexible with the way to get it met. And a willing participant is someone who's willing to meet the underlying need, willing to meet the need for consistency, affection, honesty, trust. And they will work with you to do that. Now, when we think about toxic people, you know, then we have to think about what do we mean? Do we mean somebody who has narcissistic personality disorder? Are we talking about, you know, a personality disorder? Are we talking about someone who lacks empathy? Certainly there are signs of certain, right, like signs of an emotionally abusive person, right? Like the number one sign of an emotionally abusive person is someone is love bombing. So if you are meeting someone and you don't know them very well and they are, you know, giving you so many compliments and flattering you and they're acting like you've known each other for years and there's a lot of intimacy too soon, they want to move in together, they want to get married, this is the biggest red flag that there is. Other red flags are forms of gaslighting, so saying things like, I don't remember that, or you never said that, right? Or you're crazy, or you're over-emotional. So character assassinations, right, are big red flags. People not following through on their word is a big red flag. So if you're dating someone, you want to be paying attention to person just, or you want to pay attention more to their actions than their words. It doesn't matter if they say that they're kind or they're honest, you know, or they're consistent. What matters more is paying attention. How are they with animals? How are they talking to, you know, waiters and waitresses? How do they talk about their previous relationships? Because people who have empathy and care, they're able to talk about all of their relationships in depth, like as talking about other people's perceptions, right?
Right.
And they talk about the people in their lives as three-dimensional people, and they could put themselves in their shoes, right? Like if you're talking to a person who, for example, has narcissistic personality disorder, you will notice that all of the characters in their life sound like the same person, you know? They don't have much depth. And it's very hard for the person to put themselves in their shoes. If you ask them, what was your mom thinking or feeling? Or what was your ex-girlfriend or boyfriend thinking or feeling? What was happening for them? What was their life like? They have a very hard time empathizing or putting themselves in other people's shoes. So those are the things to look out for. But the biggest thing to remember is that even if somebody is not a toxic person, they may not be a willing participant. They may not be a good and healthy person for you. They could be a nice, sweet, empathic person and still not be right for you. So you want to be thinking about, is this person a willing participant? When I let them know the way that their behaviors impact me, do they care? When I make requests, do we negotiate them fairly? Do my needs get met? Do they hear my needs? Do they, right, like reflect back my emotions? Does that make sense?
Yes. Now, my question is, how do you tell the difference between a controlling person and an overly jealous person? Because a lot of times in relationships, you don't see that sign that the person is overly jealous or is controlling. It starts off very, very, very slow, switch to controlling small things, and the next thing you know, they're full-blown into jealousy.
Right. Well, the distinction is that jealousy is a feeling and being controlling is a behavior. So people are free to feel as jealous as they please, but that doesn't give them the freedom to be controlling, right? Like, people could feel really angry and not be aggressive. Anger is a feeling and aggression is a behavior. And many of us could feel anger at a 99% and not necessarily punch someone, right? And many of us could feel feelings of jealousy and insecurity, right? And still not feel entitled to tell our partner what to do. So what we want to do if somebody's trying to control us is actually be firm and say, no, you know, I'm not going to be coming home at this time. Or we may want to be checking in on what do you need. If you're needing trust, if you're needing consistency, if you're needing safety, let's negotiate that in such a way where it's not stepping over my needs and my boundaries. So a person who is empathic and who cares about you is going to be willing to negotiate both people's needs fairly. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Their jealousy is not going to trump your feelings, right?
Right.
You feeling subjugated and you feeling, right, suffocated and you feeling stuck and trapped.
Right.
And so you negotiate things.
It's important that you mentioned being a willing participant, capable of empathy. I think a lot of people are not capable of empathy when they're in relationships. They lose that because they're caught up in their stuff. They're just caught up in their codependency, and they haven't worked on it, and they don't realize that they're in it, and they're not capable of empathy. They're so afraid of moving forward.
So,
you know what I mean? They're so stuck.
Actually, we want to be really careful because most people are capable of empathy, right? So if somebody is showing that they're not capable of empathy, there's concern. But you're making an interesting point, right? Because when we are triggered, when all of us are triggered, you know, we tend to behave in ways that, you know, we could regret the things we say and do. But that doesn't mean that we lack empathy. So there's a way for assessing whether somebody's capable of empathy. When somebody's not capable of empathy, it's not that they're just not empathic when they're triggered. They're just not empathic at all times, right? We don't have such a thing as selective empathy, right? So if somebody has an issue with empathy, we would see that when they're triggered and when they're just fine and not triggered at all. Whereas some of us, we get triggered, we say we do things we regret, and then we feel bad, we feel guilt, and we could apologize for it. Another piece that's very important is that when we're assessing if somebody's a willing participant, we have to be consistent with our own values. We have to communicate effectively, because if we ourselves are being ineffective or if we're being abusive, then we never know if the other person is a willing participant or not, right? If I come to my partner and I go, you know, you're home, you didn't do the dishes, you don't care about me, you're so selfish, you're such a jerk, you never follow through, and I'm just unloading and I'm attacking and I'm blaming and I'm criticizing, and then they respond defensively and with anger, I never know, is my partner just not empathic? Are they not a willing participant? Or are they responding to me attacking and blaming them?
Right.
So part of us knowing if somebody else is a healthy person, an empathic person, and a willing participant, is that we have to make sure that if we are triggered, like I say, if we're triggered over a 75%, that's not a time to negotiate or make requests or have conversations. It's a timeout. We take an hour timeout. We sit with ourselves. We write down our nonviolent communication formula. We clarify what we need, what we felt, what was our trigger. And then we come back to the conversation using effective communication. We could never know if the person we're dealing with is toxic or healthy, whether they're empathic or not, whether they're willing, but nothing. We can't get any information about the other person if we ourselves are acting in ways that are ineffective, in ways that involve attacking, blaming, criticizing, right?
Right. Wow, that was a really great answer. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
We have a track next by Internet international internet radio host, Hall of Fame broadcasting legend, Brother O.
So far from where I started out, so far from where I wanna be, listening for answers in the wind, but can't find a rock to stand in my feet, looking for love in all the wrong places, down on my knees and now I'm praying for patience, I know there's gotta be a better way, in the back of my mind I hear my mama say, slow down baby, going too fast, you got your hands in the air with your feet on the gas, you're about to wreck your future.
Product of WBNN. This is Breaking the Silence, and I'm your host, Mo Garman, on air now from Lagos, Nigeria. Dial in at 516-453-9133. Press 1 to join the conversation, brought to you by Ngozi Time Multimedia. And tonight we have an interview with Dr. Abigail Lev, and our topic is how untreated trauma impacts relationships. Dr. Lev, I'd like to know, how do we heal trauma, trauma bonding, and complex PTSD?
Yeah, that's a long answer.
Okay.
I will start by maybe explaining a little bit what trauma bonding is, because I find that many people don't understand the term. Like many people will say, I was talking to somebody about my trauma and we were trauma bonding. But actually, okay, sharing a trauma is not trauma bonding. or even going through a trauma with someone is also not trauma bonding. So what trauma bonding is that when a person who's causing us trauma, we end up bonding with this person because of the gaslighting and the reverse victim offender role that they get into. So we are in a relationship with someone. They end up traumatizing us. Maybe they abuse us. Then they blame us, right? They go, I hit you because you were emotional. I hit you because you were mean. If you just didn't do this, I wouldn't have done that, right? And then what happens is we then become dependent on them for their forgiveness. We then feel their shame, right? We feel their trauma. We feel traumatized, and we grow more dependent on them to release us from the trauma and from the shame. And so that's kind of what trauma bonding is. It's bonding with someone through being traumatized, not through a shared trauma or shared experience. So healing trauma is a long process, but it's really about really making friends with our internal experiences. So practicing mindfulness, exposure. We do exposure. So for example, if somebody is afraid of a spider, what we do in cognitive behavioral therapy is we take tiny baby steps to get closer to the spider. We may first look at pictures of spiders or movies of spiders, and then, right, at some point we may put a spider in like a box and then a see-through box, and then at some point we'll hold the spider. And if somebody has, right, we want to make friends with the spider. We take tiny little steps, like a hierarchy, that at the point that we do hold the spider, it's not so scary. And it's the same with trauma. So if I get held up at gunpoint at McDonald's, now I'm going to be afraid of going to McDonald's. I'm also going to be afraid of the thoughts, the feelings, the memories connected with that trauma. And what we want to do is do exposure by going back to the memories, going eliciting the feelings, right? Being mindful and practicing self-compassion, and we do certain grounding techniques, right? And we may go back to McDonald's at some point, but we may start very small. We may imagine the McDonald's sign, right? We may imagine a Big Mac, but at some point we want to be able to go back to where the trauma happened, and we want to get to a place where the thoughts, the feelings, the memories, the sensations associated with the trauma don't invoke that level of trigger for us. We get desensitized to it, right? The more that we're around it, the more that we feel it, the more that we have it, the more desensitized we are to it. And so the same thing that we do exposure to a spider or place, we could also do exposure with feelings. We bring difficult feelings closer. We hold them kind of like a crying baby. We make space in our bodies, right, for all of the difficult emotions and sensations. It's a practice that takes a long time. We make space from the stories that we have built, to the narratives that we have built connected to the trauma, so that those narratives, you know, are not so strong, and so that they're not driving our actions. And once we, you know, can learn to deal with the internal experiences of trauma, our urges, our memories, our feelings, our sensations, kind of like a crying baby, and make more space for it, then we start learning the skills of doing new behaviors, you know, behaviors that will create healthier relationships, safer relationships, you know, better work relationships. And we learn certain skills, like how do we tell when somebody is trustworthy, right? How do we build a trust over time so that then we are, you know, no longer, like you said, repeating our early traumas and our conditioning.
Right. Wow. So is trauma different from PTSD that way? Is the healing the same, or is that different?
Well, trauma is a term that we talk, that we use about any traumatic incident. So anything could be traumatizing. Anything could be a trauma. A PTSD is a diagnosis. So if somebody has post-traumatic stress disorder, they meet criteria, including having flashbacks, and having, a lot of fear and hypervigilance, right? And so all of these symptoms connected with trauma that would fulfill a diagnosis of post-traumatic stress disorder. The most important part, actually, of PTSD diagnosis is avoidance. We avoid the places and people connected to the trauma. We avoid thoughts, feelings, memories connected to the trauma. So if we just have a trauma and we don't avoid it, it rarely develops into a diagnosis. It rarely develops into post-traumatic stress disorder. Post-traumatic okay. stress disorder gets developed because we're avoiding the pain.
Okay. Okay. Right now, we have caller one in the queue. Caller one, can you tell us where you're calling from and tell us your name, please?
Hi, my name is Laverne, and I'm calling out of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
Hi, Laverne. How are you tonight?
I'm doing well, thank you. I'm enjoying your show. I wanted to ask a question concerning a comment that that your guest made about creating the importance of negotiating needs in a relationship. I don't remember exactly how you phrased it, but you talked about being able to negotiate needs within a relationship and how having both partners being willing to, negotiate those things so that both people are satisfied. And I was just wondering in terms of people who have suffered trauma, who may find themselves being triggered within a relationship, how much can a person who's suffered trauma be trusted to determine their needs in a relationship and not be asking things that turn out to be controlling or, just not in step with what is
yes.
going to create a healthy relationship.
Yeah. I'm going to answer your question, and then I'll ask you if I answered it fully. But I think what you're asking is the difference between a demand and a request. So, for example, it's actually okay to be controlling. Like, I could make a request for anything. I could go, hey, Mo, I feel when you talk about ketchup, I feel really scared, and I need safety. Would you be willing to not talk about ketchup? You always have the freedom to request whatever you want. Always. You can request anything. You could say, I'd like you to be home every day. I'd like you to never leave the house. I'd like you to never have any friends. Would you be willing to do that? It's not about the request. It's about your willingness to hear no. So a request is, I say, I need safety. Would you be willing to dress like a clown? And the person goes, your need for safety. I want you to feel safe. I don't feel comfortable dressing like a clown, I do want you to feel safe. Maybe I could wear the clown nose, or maybe we could dress like clowns on Halloween, or maybe is it like the shoes, or maybe I put clown makeup on you. So you see, it's not about what you're asking for. It's about your willingness to have the person say no to what you want. So we have a need is a general thing, like I need safety, or I need consistency, or I need affection. And the want, the request, is very specific. It's one specific way to get the need met. And we often confuse the two. We often get stuck in what we want. We go, I want to kiss right now. And if you don't kiss me, you hate me, you don't love me, you don't care about me, right? But if we focus on the need, we go, I need affection. Would you be willing to give me a kiss? When I say, would you be willing? I'm also, if the person says no, and I respond with anger, guilt, punishment, then I made a demand. If I'm willing to hear no, and I'm still negotiating the underlying need, then I didn't make a demand. I made a request. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that does. It does.
So there's a couple of different pieces. We have to first distinguish between the need and the want. Like, I need consistency. Would you be willing to call me every hour? And the person goes, you know, calling you every hour is too intense for me. Could we do this? Can I meet your need for consistency in another way? If the person says that to me and I go, yeah, why don't you call me every night or every other night? Now I made a request. If the person says, no, I can't call you every single hour, but I still want you to feel safe and I want consistency. I want to meet your need for consistency. And I say, you're not going to call me every hour. You're selfish. You're a jerk. You don't love me. I'm not going to talk to you, right? If I threaten, I guilt trip, I respond in this way, that means I didn't make a request. I made a demand. So
okay.
We are free to make any request we want. But if we start making demands, that's very different.
I follow you very well. Thank you. But I also wanted to pick up on that and ask then, when we are able to identify those needs and then, you know, figure out the healthiest way to negotiate them within the relationship, what do you do? What conclusions should you draw when, you know, perhaps you're dealing with someone who is apt to tell you that your needs are just based out of your trauma and therefore they're not legitimate?
No, you say no. That would be gaslighting, and you go, no, my need is always valid. So needs are always valid. Our requests could be valid or invalid. The person always has the right. So if I say I need trust, valid. I need safety, valid. I need consistency. I need honesty. Nobody could tell me that my needs are not valid. They're always valid. But you have the freedom to decide how you're willing to meet that need, right? I need safety. Would you be willing to jump like a chicken? No, I don't want to jump like a chicken, right? Like bark like a chicken. But what else could I do to help you feel safe? Well, I need you to tell me you love me every 5 minutes. Well, can I tell you I love you every week? Could I tell you I love you when you tell me you're sad? So it's like we are negotiating always the need, and the need is always valid. What we want is just one specific way to meet the need. That's why we stay very rigid with the need. We don't let go of the need, and we don't let anybody ever invalidate our needs, ever. Whether we have trauma, zero trauma, 20% trauma, or 99% trauma, our needs are always valid, always. And then the request is what we negotiate. And the person has the freedom to be willing or not willing to do what we want, to have the specific way to meet the need. But that doesn't mean that that our need shouldn't get met. If right, it's like if I say I need affection, would you be willing to give me a hug? No. Would you be willing to give me a kiss? No. Would you be willing to rub my back? No. Would you be willing to rub my hair? Would you be willing to play some wars? And let's imagine the person says, yes, I'll play some wars. Now, my need for affection has been met in some way, and that person has negotiated with me. Now, I have to assess whether my needs are being met in a relationship, not my wants. And it is up to us to be responsible for making sure that our needs are met. If somebody starts invalidating your need, they go, why do you need honesty, or why do you need this? You're being this. You're too emotional. You need too much connection. You need too much this. That is just invalidating. And you just say, actually, my need is valid. I need connection. And you just repeat it. Nope, my need for connection is valid. We could find another way to meet it. We could get creative here. But my need for connection is valid.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
Thank you, caller. We have a track next by International Internet Radio Host Hall of Fame broadcasting legend, Brother O.
Across the water, just to find what was to run to the arms of curiosity, just to find what was here in my life all along. I had found that the art of simplicity simply means making peace with your complexity. If Gandhi can't forgive persecution, surely you can. Forgive me for being so petty.
I'm only human.
Let's shake free this gravity of resentment and fly high and fly high.
You're only human.
Let's shake free this gravity of judgment and fly high on the wings of forgiveness.
This is a product of WBNN. This is Breaking the Silence, and I'm your host, Mo Garman. We have caller two in the queue. Caller, can you please tell us where you're calling from and who you are?
Oh, this is Mr. Boston.
Hello, Mr. Boston. How are you tonight?
Hey, you know, I'm sitting up here at my desk at work, so, and I, you know, and doing all of this paperwork. So I'm going to call into the show and listen to the show while I have just these moments doing all these orders. You know, I must say, with how you broke everything down in its categories, it reminded me when I was in college getting my degree in human services and crisis intervention. And you know, I always like to say that trauma is a crisis waiting to explode if not treated, or trauma is a festering wound in a dark room if left untreated. And you broke that down. It just reminded me of being in class 5 days a week, you know, 3 hours a day, and I'm just listening at you. You're just like a teacher, and just bringing back all of those instructions, you know, and And I'm going to try to make it a point to come to this classroom. This is a classroom. And all you guys out there listening, this lady has got it down pat. She got it point by point. She's telling you exactly how it happens, when it happens, and how to treat it, you know. So I just want to just give you a shout-out, clap my hands to you, and say job well done.
Thank you, Boston. I appreciate that.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Okay, now I'm going back to work.
Mr. Boston.
If anybody wants to visit my website, cbtonline.com, I have a list of feelings and a list of needs, the nonviolent communication formula and videos that explain how to use it, and I have some online courses for communication and also narcissism and a lot of these kinds of things.
3 and Q. Caller, can you tell us where you're calling from and who you are? Caller 3.
All right, caller 3, you're on the line. We'll go to the next caller. Got 5 seconds. Well, less than that. All right, we'll go to the next caller. Caller, you're on the line right now with Mo Garman and Breaking the Silence right here at WBNN.
Hello, how are you tonight, Mo? And greetings to your guest, Dr. Abigail. This is Chinchilla J, also known as Dr. C or Chinchilla Jonesia. I am really enjoying this show tonight on trauma. It's a show that's definitely needed. And I deal with a lot of people that have PTSD. And what I do now, dealing with families and those individuals who have been wrongfully incarcerated, the exonerees, when they are exonerated from prison, every last one of them suffer from PTSD. It is something that can't be avoided because when you're wrongfully incarcerated, it's a nightmare. It's almost like being in a war because they go through those same things. They're fighting for their lives behind those prison bars and prison walls. And they're trying to survive. They're trying to stay alive. And they're doing this at the same time knowing that they're innocent and never committed a crime, but yet they're serving sentences behind bars, some 10 years, 20, 30, 40, even 50 years, wrongfully behind bars. And some are on death row, and so they're facing the possibility of that they're going to be executed without nobody finding out that they're innocent. And so those men that get exonerated from death row, their PTSD is even worse than the others. But post-traumatic stress disorder is something that no one really wants to have. But these men and women that have been wrongfully incarcerated, there are so many different things that can bring back those memories. And those memories will be with them forever. Because they could just be watching a television show one moment, you know, you're laughing and happy and talking, and then watching a movie, something in that movie could bring back a memory of what happened in prison. Or it can bring back a memory of in the courtroom being convicted and no one believing them. And it's such a sad situation because they have nightmares continuously, so many flashbacks, and you know, because that's a tragic experience for them. And some people don't understand that, but in prison it's a traumatic experience even for those that are in prison for crimes they did actually commit. It's still traumatic. And then I also so I deal with them on a regular basis. I counsel them, and I also counsel women who have been abused, women who have been raped. And being raped, that's another thing that women, they do have PTSD also, because experiencing a rape for some women anything could trigger off that feeling. It could be maybe they're married now, but then maybe the husband touches her in a way that rapist did, and that can bring back that traumatic experience for her. And it's
right.
So sad, but
also,
PTSD. Yes. What do you say, doctor?
I want to say that, you know, it's really important when we're working with a trauma that we don't see these memories, right? Like that we remind clients that memories are not dangerous. Like memories are inside of us, and we help them recognize the difference between the lived experience versus remembering the experience. And we build strength in them, that the more they are making space for their memories, the more that we help them regulate their nervous system, right? When we help them have these memories under different contexts, with love, with gentleness, with mindfulness, these memories no longer have to be their enemy. And I want to make sure,
right,
you know, that we hold a trauma not just as just an awful thing, but trauma is also an opportunity. We have opportunities to rebuild narratives, to create meaning, and, you know, to create purpose, you know, and to heal wounds and to thrive, you know, to really, you know, like Viktor Frankl, he wrote a book called Man's Search for Meaning, and he was in the Holocaust. Mm-hmm. He was in Auschwitz. And he says, everything can be taken away from man except his freedom to choose his attitude. Under any circumstances and any imprisonment, we always have the freedom to choose our attitude and the way we want to be, what we want to be about. And he talks a lot about how through suffering we create meaning and purpose. And so I think we want to hold that the importance of that, you know, and not also not, you know, because I think, you know, trauma could be from a 2% to a 99%, right? But we all have some sort of trauma, and we have to feel like we could heal from it and grow from it and move towards post-traumatic growth, right? That we go from post-traumatic stress to post-traumatic growth.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. Now, let me ask you a question now. Okay, so now, for the men that I counsel that have PTSD, now there's a lot of times, you know, they get so angry because
right.
of the way the government has wronged them, and especially
right.
in the states that don't compensate exonerees. So
right.
they often get upset and they vent and they're angry at the whole
yeah.
government. They're angry at
yeah,
the prosecutor,
sure.
at the judge, at the jury,
yeah.
and, you know, and
yeah.
they always constantly say, well, you know, they could have been this or that had not they been wrongfully incarcerated, because their life was stolen from them, and the relationships with their children, and losing all of those milestones, missing all those milestones in their children's lives and all, it really angers them. And
yes,
how
they
can
be angry. They should
we
be enraged, right?
Get past the anger?
Well, we get past first. We don't. We want to take a stance where we actually don't have to get past anything. An emotion. When we go on a roller coaster, you know, we have all of these sensations. Our hands are shaking. Our hearts are racing, right? And then we get off of the roller coaster, and in 2 minutes, we go back to baseline. And all emotions are the same. If I have an emotion like anger, rage, sadness, if I allow it, I make space for it, I'm staying with it, I listen to it, it passes. If I go, why am I so angry? I shouldn't be this angry. Why am I sad? Am I anxious because of this? I need to do this. The more we try to escape it, the bigger it gets. So rather than getting past the anger, I would want to say something like, it makes sense that you're angry. You should be absolutely enraged. And what your anger is saying is that you have self-respect. This is your dignity talking. Of course you're angry. You lost something that you didn't deserve this. So your anger is actually a form of self-compassion to yourself. And then we allow the anger. We notice that all of our emotions, you know, are there for a reason, you know, and all of our emotions are there to be listened to. I would want to listen to their anger. I'd want them to take their hand and put it either on their heart and send kindness to that anger, or anywhere else in their body where they feel the anger most intensely. And rather than trying to push it away, I want to make space for the anger. What does the anger want you to do? What is the anger telling you about what matters to you in life, what you want to be about, what you want to stand for, how you want to move forward? Because the anger is about something. Anger lets us know when our boundaries have been crossed and when we've been wronged, and your anger is justified. And then I'd want to know what do they need, right? What is the underlying need? So under every emotion that we have that is uncomfortable, there's always an underlying need. And maybe they need respect. Maybe they need to be seen and heard, right? They need their dignity. Mm-hmm. They need their story to be valid, to be seen. And once we allow the anger to guide us, it will move us forward. It will open us up.
Did that answer your question?
Wow, thank you. Yes, that says a lot. That definitely says a lot. Now, with I guess I would want to now ask you another question. So for the people that are really having a hard time and then like to see growth within like what they're actually experiencing, because some I've been dealing with for a number of years. And I have seen some growth where they're not, like, talking about the same thing as much or getting, like, those triggers that get them upset and with the different mood swings as much. So, I mean, that's progress. And it's good that they're making progress. And I don't know, I just wish I could just, like, remove all that pain from all of them, and, you know, but I know I can't do that. So I just want to basically, I guess, find more ways to actually help them to deal with that PTSD. And do you think it will ever, like, go away?
I don't think things go away. I think we build a different relationship with them. When we build a different relationship with our internal experiences, kind of like the weather, you know, like it was raining the other day and I'm complaining, why is it raining? I hate the rain. It shouldn't be raining, right? But in reality, sometimes it rains and sometimes it's sunny and sometimes it's snowy, but the sky remains the same. And we all have different weathers, and yet we remain the same. We don't have to push any weather away. We don't have to push any thought, feeling, memory. We build a different kind of relationship with it, one of compassion and kindness and curiosity and wondering, what is this telling me about my values? What is this telling me about what I need in life? What is this telling me about what matters to me in my relationships and in my life and what I want to stand for? And so I never want people to get rid of even the most difficult emotions, right? Our instinct is to go, I don't want this. But when we practice with our bodies, like letting it be, noticing it, we start building a new relationship with it. And I will say that it's not about making it go away. It's about making it into something meaningful. It's about taking the narrative, owning it, and going, what do I want to be about with this story? How do I want to, right, like take control of my behaviors? Right? We live in a society that tells us, It fools us into thinking that we should be able to control our feelings, right? People say things like, calm down, don't worry about it, relax. But anytime, we all know what it feels like when we're upset and somebody says relax, we just get more and more upset, right? We want somebody to go, yes, it's upsetting, that sucks. We don't want somebody to go, relax, don't worry. Because our internal experiences are not in our control in the same way that our behaviors are. So we have to build a different relationship with it. And so I think that, you know, what you said right now about wanting to take away your client's pain, I imagine that that person would love to hear that from you, right? To kind of sit there and say to them, this is so painful. Like, I wish I could take this pain out of your body and put it into me or into somewhere else. I wish I could relieve you of this suffering. And I can't, and you can't. And all we could do is be loving with this. And all we could do is notice what this is like and think about what do we, how do we want to move forward? And I imagine that that would be so
wow.
meaningful for them to hear that, right? That you care about them so much that you have a wish to relieve them of their suffering. That's compassion, right? Compassion is knowing we can't get rid of someone's suffering, but just having this wish, and may you feel loved, may you be exonerated, may you be safe, right? May you accept yourself as you are, right? May you hold this anger. May this anger help you move towards respect and boundaries, right? And having your needs met.
Wow.
Thank you so much, Dr. Abigail. That's really awesome. Thank you so very much.
Thank you.
Definitely,
thank you for the work that you're doing. It's beautiful work
thank
that you're
you.
Doing. It's very hard work. Yeah. Very, very hard.
Okay, we have a track next by International Internet Radio host, Hall of Fame, broadcasting legend, Brother O.
Back when I had a little, I thought that I needed a lot. A little was overrated. But a lot was a little too complicated. See, zero didn't satisfy me. A million didn't make me happy. That's when I learned the lesson. That it's all about your perception. Hey, are you a papa or a superstar? So you act, so you feel, so you are. It ain't about the size of your car. It's about the size of the face in your heart. There's hope. It doesn't cost a thing to smile. Don't have to pay to laugh. You better thank God for that. There's hope. It doesn't cost a thing to smile. You don't have to pay to laugh. You better thank God for that. There's hope. Off in the back country of Brazil, I met a young brother that made me feel that I could accomplish anything. You see, just like me, he wanted to think he had no windows and no doors. He lived a simple life and was extremely poor. On top of all of that, he had no eyesight. But that didn't keep him from seeing the light. He said, us alike in the USA. And all I did was complain. Living here is paradise. He taught me paradise is in your mind. You know that there's hope. It doesn't cost a thing to smile. You don't have to pay to laugh. Better thank God for that. There's hope. It doesn't cost a thing to smile. You don't have to pay to laugh.
Yeah.
product of WBNN. This is Breaking the Silence, and I'm your host, Mo Garman. We have caller 5 in the queue. Caller, can you tell us where you're calling from and who you are?
Mo, this is Tara Strength.
Oh, my goodness. Hello, Tara.
Hey, listen, I'm really enjoying this show. Your guest is outstanding. I'm sitting here taking notes myself, thinking about my life, thinking about yeah.
I'm taking notes too. That's your consolation.
So I have a question for the doctor.
Sure.
What methods of healing treatment do you recommend for childhood trauma? Is reading solely effective, or are there certain methods of therapy more effective than others?
Yeah, that's a very good question. You know, I think us therapists, we're very biased, you know, and so the method that we do, we usually think is the best, but in the reality of it, depends on the individual, and you may want to try lots of different things until you find what works for you. So I do cognitive behavioral therapy. I take a very behavioral approach, and I think it's really important, you know, to it's very important to not just talk about things. It's like, you know, we could all have an intellectual understanding of like problems or the things we need to fix, but it doesn't help us change our behaviors in our daily life, right? And so cognitive behavioral therapy is more experiential. It's about having an emotional experience. It's about understanding something on a visceral level and on a behavioral level. And so I think that any treatment that helps you not just talk about things, but it teaches you skills, right? It gives you tools for how to cope with things, how to do things differently, how to change your behaviors, how to make your daily life better. It is really important.
Okay.
Did that answer your question, Sarah?
Are there any books that you would recommend, or?
You know, it depends on what you're looking for specifically. You know, I think that there are, you know, certainly there's some interesting skills from somatic therapies. Somatic therapies have a lot of experiential exercises to do with your body. You know, there's a book called The Body Keeps the Score. There's also like polyvagal theory, which talks a lot about, you know, your nervous system and how to do certain exercises and techniques. But also, it's not just about regulating our nervous system. It's about really thinking about our values, what we want to be about, and how we translate it into our behaviors. So all of our traumas are telling us about specific things that matter to us. Do we want to be a better parent? Do we want to be more curious with ourselves and others? Do we want to maybe heal others? Do we want to teach others? Do we want to... right. So it's about, you know, learning the skills of coping, but it's also about kind of identifying what we want to be about and how do we change our actions? What are the barriers that stop us from doing the behaviors we want to do? So that's why I prefer therapies that are more behavioral, like cognitive behavioral therapy is very behavioral. Dialectical behavioral therapy is very behavioral. Acceptance and commitment therapy is very behavioral, right? We have certain treatments like functional analytic psychotherapy is very behavioral. Compassion-focused therapy. So these are the treatments that, you know, are, you know, we're looking at our thoughts and our feelings, but we really want to translate it into our daily lives.
Mm-hmm. Outstanding. Well,
awesome.
Got some work.
Thanks for calling in.
Thank you for that. That was powerful. I really appreciate it. Mo, my show will be on in a couple weeks. The Know Your Rights show with Tara Strength. Outstanding show, Mo. Congratulations. Thanks for talking to you.
Thank you.
Okay, we have caller 6 in queue. Caller, can you tell us where you're calling from and who you are?
Hi, peace and blessings, Mo, and peace and blessings to your guests.
Sister Bessie, how you doing?
I could do better, I tell you. I'm enjoying your guests, and I'm a person that has a lot of trauma, and I just want to say the trauma doesn't seem to go away, and when you seek therapy, therapy is not working for you. Can you give some other alternatives?
Sure, sure. You know, I want to say first that when you're looking for therapy, you always want your therapist to give you a formulation of the problem. So therapists shouldn't just be talking to you without telling you how they're thinking and how they're going to treat you, you know? So even on the first session, they should give you an idea of why you have this trauma, what caused the trauma, how it plays out, and how they're going to work with you on it and give you a very clear kind of treatment plan. And if you don't know, right, because therapy is not something that somebody does to you. It's a collaborative process. And so I think that when you find the right therapist, it's really important because, you know, there's this idea that co-regulation happens before self-regulation, meaning we learn to regulate ourselves through others. And so even trauma or anything that we need to work on is always best to work on it interpersonally, not intrapersonally. There's certain pieces that we work on our own, but really, especially if we have interpersonal trauma, the healing happens interpersonally. It could be with a therapist. It could be with a partner. It could be with a parent. It could be with a friend. But the healing really happens interpersonally. So I always recommend therapy or group therapy or even, you know, AA, right? Any kind of group setting where there's an opportunity to share your trauma, right? And to have other people reflect it back to you and to co-regulate. To learn how to regulate yourself by also seeing it in others and having help with it from others. I'm not sure if I answered your whole question, though. I think that certainly, you know, there's courses you could take. I offer courses. There's books that you could read. You know, all of these things are really helpful. But when it comes down to it, what matters is how we do it in our daily life and in our relationships, because that's where it matters.
Yes. Okay. Thank you. I'm also a fellow host. I'm Sister Bessie the Truther, and my show will be on April the 1st. And Mo, great job. Love you. And you have a wonderful guest on tonight. Thank you for doing what you do. Peace and blessings.
Oh, thank you
very
so much,
sweet.
Bessie. Okay, we have caller 7, believe it or not, in the queue. Caller, can you tell us where you're calling from and your name?
Hey, peace. It's the Magic Man calling from Nashville.
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing excellent. And actually, I've been waiting for the call into your show. Always here to show my support. And, thank you so much, special honored guest, for being here. If you don't mind, how long have you been a doctor?
I've been licensed since 2013, and I've been practicing therapy since like in the psychology world since like 2003 or something like that. Yeah, 2003. Studying psychology and got licensed in 2013.
Perfect. So you're the perfect one for me to ask such a question. Okay, if a person or a people that has been traumatized for such a long time, right, is it unreasonable for a person or a people to not only seek out ways to be able to heal themselves and each other, Is that being unreasonable?
Unreasonable to want to heal yourself and others?
Exactly. People who, what I'm saying, like they say, birds
well,
of a feather
flock together.
Of course
that's not unreasonable.
Okay.
That's very reasonable.
The reason why I asked that is because when I look at so many events that took tragic events around the world, but especially over here in the shores of America, right? For some mm-hmm. reason, it seems like everyone else can have an attitude with the, you know, never again, such as 911 or anything with what, like you say, what the people went through with the Holocaust. And as a person,
right.
we have soul and very, very compassionate, right? But what I don't comprehend for the life of me, it's like everyone else on this planet can speak about the things that took place in their story. But when it comes to the African-American, if they speak about the atrocities and things like that that took place for well over 400 years, all of a sudden, they're being told, just forget about it. Is that being
right.
unreasonable?
No, that's not unreasonable. You know, as a person who's white, I will tell you that I don't want you to forget about it. You shouldn't forget about it. I don't want to forget about it. Keep speaking about it. Keep remembering it. Keep honoring it. Keep fighting it. Keep being angry about it. Keep speaking up about it. I want to speak up about it. It matters. It's important. No, nobody should forget. Why should we forget?
You know, that's exactly my point. I've been called everything but a child of God for it. My only other thing I want to say is what gets me is a lot of people who have been traumatized are still wanting to be set free like a slave. You get what I'm saying? And very few people that I have come across as a traveling man have been able to receive the knowledge and be able to be willing, able, and ready to do whatever they need to do so they'll be able to break that sense of dependency. And, you know, and I think and know for a fact that you'll be one of the best ones equipped to say this to people, that you have to, one way or another, have to become responsible for your own actions. Yeah, it's a lot that has happened that we can be angry about, but until we take a stand, those who have been traumatized, until we do our part, then healing would never, ever finally take place.
Well, I think we have to, we always have to distinguish between behaviors and internal experiences, right? So like oppression is a behavior that needs to stop, but our internal oppression, the way we limit ourselves, you know, that's a different kind of freedom, right? Right. Like, so we have, do you understand what I'm saying? Like I could be, if I don't like my house, I could leave my house and be free of my house. If I don't like my phone, I could get rid of my phone. You know, if I feel oppressed by my phone. But my own thoughts and my feelings and my memories are with me. They're with me for my whole life. So, you know, even though slavery, I mean, modern slavery still exists, but in a different way, even though, right, like the impact is still the same, right? Like, even though slavery doesn't exist, even though it does in some ways, right, systemic racism is a form of slavery, but even though slavery does not exist, the memories, the anger, the feelings, the thoughts, they're with you. It's not about being free from our memories. It's about healing them, and it is about honoring them. It is not about forgetting them. It is about honoring them.
Exactly.
I totally agree. The last thing I want to say is very few people I have come across, they have been traumatized. They still need to be free. Matter of fact, say this. You and I can say the exact same thing, but you'll be more believable by virtue of the fact that you're born the way that you're born and I'm born the way that I'm born. And for some reason, your opinion or facts or whatever that you present, we could be saying the exact same thing. But the ones that have been traumatized will be able to be or receive a sense of freedom more from you than me. And that's what I'm saying. That's the minor difference is until those same people, it's okay. I can respect your opinion for you being who and what you are, right? But
can I make sure I'm understanding you correctly? You're saying that a person who has, do you mean a person who has trauma, or do you mean a person who's African American?
African Americans in particular that has been traumatized for well over 400 years. You and I can say the exact same thing, right?
And you're saying that what I say would be more impactful because I'm white?
You would be much more believable to these people by virtue of the fact that you're born the way that you're born, and I'm born the way that I'm born. And this is what I'm talking about, that you still got a lot of people. This is what, 2022, and you still got 85 to 95% of the people who still want to be free based on, they don't want to take the responsibility for themselves, but they still want to be free. Like if you were to come out and say, okay, y'all are free. You don't have to just depend on, you know, people who look like me to free y'all.
Right.
Okay? And this is sad, but I just wanted to, you know, to present this to you is because by virtue of the fact that you are a doctor. Can you comprehend what I'm saying to you?
I comprehend completely what you're saying. I think there's a truth to what you're saying, right? Like, on one level, there's real freedom that you want. You want police not to stop you and put you in jail for no reason, and that's real freedom. Then there's another piece, which is not needing validation from white people, or not making my validation more important than yours. And, you know, it's sad. It's sad that there's truth to that. I wish that there wasn't. I wish freedom for all of you. I wish freedom for everyone. And
well, I'm a different character. I'll be done. I'm a different character. See, when it comes to me, I don't care what a police or whoever look like. I'm not for someone that's going to kill me and my loved ones to get away with it. That's not going to happen.
Right.
You understand?
Right.
So I just wanted to say that's a difference in the way that I think, the way that the people that have been traumatized think, because they will sit back and allow themselves to be killed, and I'm just not one of them.
Right. Well, you've been traumatized too, but you're relating to your trauma differently. It's important not to forget. That's why it's important to remember. That's why it's important, right, to come to your values and think about what you want to be about with the trauma.
Thank you so much.
Sure, thank you. I appreciate your deep thoughts and challenges. I like it.
Okay. Right now we're going to have our final thoughts. And I just wanted to share your contact information with us again, Dr. Liz.
Mm-hmm.
How would people get in contact with you if they want to receive your services?
Yeah, you can. You could send me an email at alev. So it's A as in apple, L as in lake, E as in E, V as in Victor, at bayareacbtcenter.com. So it's alev@bayareacbtcenter.com. And then I have my two websites, which is bayareacbtcenter.com and also cbtonline.com. So those are places that you can reach me and find me.
Thank you so much for sharing that. And now we go to Ngozi time.
Well, I want to thank the good doctor tonight for explaining, you know, her thought processes into what we need to be better with in healing. And I want to thank Mo Garman tonight for bringing an outstanding performance and journalism tonight. These conversations are very, very important. Everybody's conversation tonight, the people that press one, I'm proud of you. And that's what it's all about. This is what we call talk radio. And we have a champion coming on tomorrow night at 9:30 Eastern Daylight. Her name is Antonia Batts, a special edition of Informational Guru. Before I go there, one person came on tonight, didn't get a chance to, you know, talk about her show. Her name is Chinchilla Jay, the 2021 Linear New Host of the Year here at WBNN, and Deputy Commissioner. I love her and respect her as well. And, of course, Hootie Bakatoon, so fired up tonight. His show is called We Will Wear You. It'll be on in 2 Thursdays from now. But tomorrow night, the International Internet Radio Hall of Fame broadcasting nominee for the class of 2020, the wonderful Miss Antonia Batson, Informational Guru, 9:30 Eastern, daylight time at WBNN. And, of course, WBNN has the advertising too and Ngozi Time Multimedia. We are at Ngozi Time at Twitter and Instagram, also Pinterest. And also, Ola Dummy Malaria goes to Facebook. Any comments, suggestions, or welcome program tonight? Olay, that goes with my and gmail.com. And I am your mother and father's favorite producer, the 2022 International Internet Radio Hall of Fame Lifetime Achiever Elect. But most importantly, your mother and father's favorite. Ola Dummy Malaria goes to saying goodnight and good luck to all the folks out there on Force Radio that support us on a constant basis tonight. Thank you for another outstanding Friday night show. Mo Garland, you have 2 minutes. Let's go to the program.
Dr. Lev, I just want to say thank you so much for being a special guest. You've been insightful. You have just opened up our entire conversation about trauma, and I just want to say thank you so much for being here. And I want to thank everybody for listening. Have a good night.